It's time for This Week in WordPress, episode number 354, entitled Motorized Motor. It was recorded on Monday the 27th of October, 2025. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and today I'm going to be joined by Tim Nash, also by Stacey L. Carlson, and by Mark Wilkinson. It's a WordPress podcast, so we do spend quite a bit of time talking about WordPress, but we also get diverted into various different avenues as well. So we talk about various bits that Tim has brought, all about security in the WordPress space. We talk about how newsletters never really went away, or at least they're back. Stacey tells us that now is the best time to get back on the bandwagon of newsletters. And then Mark digs into a piece from Katie Keith from Barn2, all about whether or not it's a good idea to have a lifetime deal for your WordPress product. Stacey definitely thinks that it is. WordPress 6.9, it needs a lot of testing, and there is an article this week which tells you exactly how you can do that. We also talk about whether or not some AI slop has crept into our feed, a search engine journal article which Tim thinks really ought to be discounted. So we get into it, and then we sort of don't. And then we spend quite a large amount of time getting into various different pieces all about AI and how it's affecting WordPress. Matt Medeiros did a piece all about how AI can be used inside this new Atlas browser from ChatGPT to help you create pages and watch it happening in front of your eyes. And Mark Westgard from WS Form has the exact same thing, an agentic AI which is enabling you to create forms by just typing in text. Scary times, amazing times. And it's all coming up next on This Week in WordPress. This episode of the WP Builds podcast is brought to you by GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And by Bluehost. Redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And by OmniSend. Do you sell your stuff online? Then meet OmniSend. Yes, that OmniSend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up. Try OmniSend today at omnisend.com. Every week it kills me, and I never do anything about it. That music is so bad. 2 minutes of sheer hell is what you could describe that as. But anyway, there we go. It is WP Builds This Week in WordPress. We're on episode number 354, which is rather a lot. And hopefully we'll keep going into the future. But for now, we have our Halloween episode. Now, I have a confession to make. Usually, Michelle Frechette joins us, and she makes a real effort. She does all this Halloween stuff. She paints her face. She does an outfit and everything. And she's not with us this week, which is a great shame. So I'm not sure anybody's made an effort. Normally, I've got a cupboard full of kids' stuff just through there somewhere, and I went to check it out and bring all the stuff out to, you know, put on the cupboard behind me. It's all been hit in the trash. It's all gone into the trash. So there's no Halloween at all. The only slight thing I've got for you is this somewhat humiliating thing. Let's see what that looks like. It's pretty bad. I'll be doing that as the episodes go on.
Have you spent all morning on that?
No, about 8 minutes is how long I spent on that.
Well, that's really sweet. 7 minutes more than you should have done.
Thank you. I appreciate your support. You're quite right. Maybe I should never do that again. But we're here, and we would love to have your comments. Let me go around and introduce the panel. We're going to talk about WordPressy stuff, but important to get to know who they are first. First one over there is the Doom speaker. Ooh. It's Tim Nash. Hello.
I was going to make an effort, I promise. And then
okay. But yeah, that's easy.
Moved house. I know, but I moved house, so that's my excuse.
Okay, I don't have such an excuse. But anyway, thank you. Tim always drops an interesting bio, and I deliberately never go and read it. So I don't know what he's done this time around. Let's see.
Very tame.
Oh, is it? The ordinary. Yeah. Okay, well, never mind. Here we go. I'm going to read it out. Tim is a security consultant and professional doom speaker who peers into the cosmic void. Okay, it's already gone a bit weird. The cosmic void, so you don't have to. When tentacled nightmares rise from the abyss to brute force your login page, he simply sips tea and deploys best practices. By day, he shares his arcane knowledge at timnash.co.uk. By night, he battles eldritch PHP misconfigurations. Did I say that right? Is that
you did, saying? Yeah.
This Thursday at WPLDN, he will reveal how to keep your site safe when ancient horrors attempt to guess your password, one unspeakable character at a time. That wasn't that tame. That was pretty good. Can I ask, do you help? Do you get help with the AI?
We've been having ChatGPT-based bios for the last 6 months or so.
I think
I peaked at getting you to do something in the style of... Alan Parsons, and we've sort of like
Alan Partridge.
No, Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh,
who was and Quoth the Raven, which was
that's right. Yeah, yeah,
covered
yeah.
by Alan Parsons, the Alan Parsons Project. So,
well, I'm glad that
was my peak.
I'm glad that you kept it simple for me this week. That was nice, and I didn't have to read it out like a pirate or a witch or anything like that. So that was really nice. Thank you.
You don't take stage direction very well, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry. What can I say? Blame my mother. Okay, we're also joined by Stacey L. Carson. This is the first time on the show, so it's very nice to have you. Hello, Stacey.
Hello.
Stacey L. Carson brings over 15 years of experience in affiliate marketing and strategic partnerships. She began her career as an entrepreneur in 2005, running her own e-commerce business, which gave her a strong foundation in online business and affiliate strategy. A longtime WordPress user since 2006, now serves as director of global and affiliate influencer marketing at Automattic, overseeing programs for WordPress.com, WooCommerce Marketplace, Pressable, and Jetpack. Crikey, you've got quite a broad panoply of things going on there, haven't you?
I've been everywhere.
You have, yeah. Well, I hope that you'll be everywhere here and
come back and
frequent this show many, many more times. The last person on the panel, we're going to get it right down there, is Mark Wilkinson. Hello, Mark.
Hello there.
Nice to have you with us. I've met Mark in the real world a few times, a couple of times, I think, at WPLDN, but it was never been on the show. So we've got 50% of the panel are novices and 50% are, I don't know what to describe us like, Tim, but on novice, grumpy old man. Okay, we'll go with that. Yeah, nice. But Mark is a WordPress developer and business owner at High Rise Digital. He's the author of Job Relay, a WordPress SaaS product for recruitment companies. In addition to this, he helps build WordPress job boards using his RecPress,
yeah.
Thank you. Product and recruitment websites using WordPress. Mark loves sharing knowledge in the WordPress space, which probably comes from his former role as a teacher. He taught 11 to 16-year-old students over 12 years teaching geography, ICT, and computing. Away from his computer, Mark enjoys spending lots of time on the golf course. I'm going to go back to your teaching days. Is there any part of you that misses that, Mark?
A small part,
yeah,
but a very, very small part.
Lots of it.
It's like you no longer have the it gave you.
When you teaching is so rewarding, it's so fulfilling, and that part of it is amazing. Every teacher enjoys that. It's just all the rest of it that gets in the way, really.
The other 40 hours a week of paperwork and needless stuff. Yeah. Well, anyway, there is our panel. Hopefully the newbies, Stacey and Mark, will join us many, many times. We are hopefully going to be joined by some commenters. I'll do the usual bits and pieces, just sort of introducing how it works. So if you are joining us on wpbuilds.com, which is on that page, wpbuilds.com/live. If you send people there, that's really helpful. Then everybody's got a couple of ways of commenting. The first possibility is to use the little embedded YouTube chat widget, which is on the right on a desktop and below if you're on mobile. And then if you don't like Google and don't have a Google account, there's a little button inside the video, top right. It says live chat, little black button. You don't need to be logged into anything. You just need to click the button and type in your name or something. And then you can comment. And we love it when people make comments. It really kind of keeps the whole thing going. And the first one that dropped in today, of course, I didn't really think about this. I would say a significant proportion of our audience is not in the UK. It's North America, I think, a lot. And Courtney says, oh, did you change the clocks? Yeah, well, I didn't. Well, I did, actually. I changed three of them. But, you know, I wasn't responsible for changing them en masse. I don't even know why we do it anymore, in all honesty. Apparently, it was all to do with farmers going to church and things like that back in the day. But, yes, we did. Oh. So I'm sorry if that's kind of like, you know, messed everybody's timing up. Maybe it's like crazy a clock, more so.
Does anybody still have a clock that needs changing?
I have three.
I think we had one. That was it.
Yeah, yeah. And it is easy to... Oh, the car. The car sometimes needs doing
The
as
car.
Well.
I forgot about the car.
Yeah. Can't. And it's never easy to find out. It's buried in a menu, in a menu, in a menu, in a menu, in a menu. And then you've got to kind of do a million... And then, yeah.
See, the oven... technically needs changing, but I just accept that in summer I need to add 1 hour and it's
halved. Yeah,
because that's easier than changing it.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's great. I have a smart bed. I'm going to tell you all about it later. And it needed changing. I needed to update the bed. I don't have a smart bed. I do not have a smart bed. Tammy Lister joining us. Yes, the clocks change, but we have tea. That's nice. We're also joined by Jonathan Overall, WP plugins from A to Z. Z. He's Canadian. Good morning from a very wet coast, Canada. Indeed, indeed. We change next week. T, I need more. Okay, so for a whole week, we're completely out of sync. Do we go further apart or do we get close together? I don't.
Closer.
Closer? Oh, that's good. Yeah. Oh, that makes life a little bit easier, I suppose, if you're, you know, European and North American businesses. Great, great, great. Marcus Burnett joining us. Good morning, beautiful people. So happy to see Stacey on the show. Oh, that's nice. There you go. Obviously, Mark and Stacey know one another. Patricia's saying hello. Hello, hello, hello. And then Tammy's joining us a few more times. Always the oven and the car clocks. Always the oven and the car clocks. Yeah. Hopefully not both at the same time. And also the heating. Had to change the underfloor heating. Okay. I have one of those Nest thermostats, so I'm assuming it did it all correctly without me having to think. I'm not entirely sure. And better here. 7 a.m. early start, 6 a.m. really early. Yeah, so it's a little bit better. That's good. Okay. There we go. Please keep the comments coming, especially if you've got any commentary about clocks. It turns out that's going to be the thing during the course of this week. Right, let's get on with it. This is us. This is our website, wpbuilds.com. Let's get rid of that little nag. If you like what we do and you want to keep in touch, stick your email address into that there box and then click that there button. And we'll send you two emails a week, one of them all about clocks and the other one about electric beds that you can plug into the internet. No, we won't. We'll send you things about WordPress, I promise, when we produce bits of content. For example, we just launched an episode with Matt Cromwell. I don't know if you know Matt, but he's one of the people in one of the podcasts, which is going to be mentioned in a moment. He and I had a conversation this week, and it was called Preparing WordPress Products for a Changing Demographic and AI Revolution. You can't escape it, can you? AI is absolutely everywhere, and Matt Cromwell is trying to align his products and the WordPress community so that people are ready for the onslaught of expectations from the younger people growing up who will only be able to do things through the prism of an AI. So go and have a check out of that. The other thing to mention is that we've got a Black Friday page. We do this every year. And if you want to bookmark it, it's wpbuilds.com/black. I think there's about 122 deals on there that have been sent in to me so far, something like that. And there's no affiliate links or anything like that. But if you want to sort of search and filter, you just, you know, click this little button and you can filter down on various different bits and pieces. So it's a good spot to just keep coming back to. If you fancy being pride of place, we've got some sponsored spots at the top. And you can see Mark Westgaard from WS Forms taking care of one of those. If you fancy doing that, then click the little Get Started button and we'll get you sorted out. We get a lot of hits on that each and every year. And that's it for the promotional bit. I suppose this is slightly promotional. Ooh, reject. WPLDN. is yeah, the reject was for the cookie, not for WPLDN more generally. WPLDN is, I guess, a London meetup for the WordPress community. And it's happening this Thursday, 30th of October, so pretty close to Halloween. Both Tim and Mark have been speakers there in the past. This time around, though, Tim's joining us. He always does Halloween. And yeah, if you want to join us, you can click get your tickets here. It takes you to meetup.com, which is where all the WordPress meetups are kind of traditionally held. And tickets are free, 6 o'clock start on the door, 6:30, well, six on the door, 6:30 to start. And we've got Tim, and then we've got a instead of having a second speaker, which is what we normally do, we've got a sort of more networking time and AI open topic. So we're going to crowbar some AI into that as well. So come and join us if you're in the London area or not. You know, you could live in Yorkshire, for example, and go there every month.
Yeah, you know, me and Nathan travel for nearly 3 hours to go to an event.
Yeah. What's your excuse, dear listener? You know, for those of you in North America, you get a pass. It's fine. You're not required to get on an hour.
However, mainland Europe,
we're that's totally within reach. Yeah, the channel, you know. Okay, that's it. That's the piece that I'm going to promote. So each week, we ask the guests if they wish to drop in some stories that they thought were interesting. They might be WordPress, they might not. And so we're going to do a couple from Tim first up. And obviously, it being Tim's stuff, I'm going to get him to describe it. What's this one? LJLR. Firstly, I don't know what that acronym means. Hack is the costliest cyber attack in UK history, say analysts.
And I bet you do know what that means when I tell you that's Jaguar Land Rover.
I did know that, yeah. Oh, what happened?
Well, if you have pretty much under a rock, I think, because it's one of these stories that the BBC and other media, they pick up cybersecurity stories and they sort of run with it for like a day and then it disappears. And you think, oh, that's that. It's all over. Everything's back to normal. But Jaguar Land Rover have had a rather costly time getting their systems back after a cyber attack.
Oh, okay.
Now, it got to the point where they were like, yeah, we're having problems. And it was about the same time as Marks and Spencer's, which is another big brand in the UK, but they're a shopping brand. Also, we're saying, oh, we're having problems. And Marks and Spencer recovered in a couple of weeks. This has rolled on and on and on. Oh, the government had to get involved because Jaguar Land Rover have contracts and bits. Their supply chains were being affected. Money wasn't transferring across. It cascaded really quickly. And there was a independent research group have guessing the cost. And I think if you scroll down, it says, I think it's 1.9 billion.
Ooh. Yeah, you get a few pieces for that. Yeah, there you go, 1.9. Yep.
So this is not just the direct cost to Jaguar Land Rover, who are a big business. This is the cost across the board to all the small businesses, all interconnected. And the reason I brought it up was, A, because I just wanted everybody to wince at the idea of 1.9 billion, which is what? $2.8 billion, US dollars. So it's a fairly sizable chunk of money that has just been wiped out by this attack. So and the really scary thing is that there's like categories of attacks, and this was right marked as a category 3 event, and the scale goes 1 to 5, implying this is only a mid-range one.
Yeah.
We've got 4 and 5 to get there to be really scary. And to put that in context, the M&S attack was like a category 2, which is like relatively low impact on the entire economy. Versus this, which has had a genuine impact on the economy in the United Kingdom. So I basically just wanted to scare people, but also...
Yeah, well, that's your job, isn't it, at this time of year? You know, but the also, more frightening, the better.
It's worth sort of like showing that, because quite often we see big companies just shrug things off. A few years ago, we had British Airways, another big UK brand. They had card skimmers on their checkout pages. And you'd have thought that that would have had massive impact on their bottom line. And they bounced and recovered from that really quickly. In fact, they had a better quarter the next quarter because they got a load of publicity out of being hacked. So I did want to sort of highlight that, you know, it's not all rosy and that actually these are can be damaging, because it's very easy to abstract this away and say, oh, insurance will cover it. Oh, people will feel sorry for them, so they'll buy more of their products. You don't just go, oh, do you know what? I would have bought a Jaguar. I wasn't going to buy a Jaguar, but now they've had a cyber attack, I'm definitely going to buy a £90,000 car from them.
That was exactly my thought, Tim. Straight away, I was thinking, I need to buy like a pity Jaguar.
Exactly.
It's definitely what they need.
But because you're not pity buying the Jaguar, that means that chain has almost no chance to recover. Those orders are primarily lost, but those orders affect the small businesses as well. They affect the little business that makes the blue widget, or the joiners that make the shiny wood veneer. Do Jaguars have wood veneer in? But I'm going with that. Make the wood veneer in there. And you see, there's a whole chain of stuff happening behind the scenes. And it all is a knock-on effect. And there have been there are smaller companies that have gone out of business because of a cyber attack against Jaguar Land Rover.
And
Jaguar Land Rover is going to do quite well out of it, ultimately, because they are covered by insurance and the government's giving them a massive grant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't feel quite so bad. I was just going to say being behind the attack, but I'm not going to say that because I'm going to get in such trouble. But this is why we can't have nice things, Tim. Because there are people out there who go and do silly things like this. Honestly, all I've got to say to you, dear hackers, is you need to go onto the naughty step and think long and hard about what the heck you're doing. Really.
There does seem to be a lot more of these, or certainly it feels like there's more of these in 2025 than we've ever had. Do you think that's realistically true, Tim, or do you just think we're hearing about them now?
A combination. We have seen the rise and fall. We've certainly seen a lot more attempts at ransomware style hacks against companies and corporations. We're also seeing a change in posture where the companies are being told, don't pay the hackers, which means that they then have to go, well, if we don't pay them, then we have to deal with the fallout from that. I don't think that necessarily the threat has actually increased, but I certainly public perception has, and I think companies are much more willing to get to just say, actually, we'll ride this out, we'll be okay. Yeah. Whether that's the right answer or the wrong answer, I don't know, but I think more companies are riding this out, and they also are reaching for publicity earlier. One thing that has changed is that I think companies' perspective is that they don't necessarily think of themselves as failing by having a cyber incident, whereas before it would be hush hush, like, we're gonna hate this.
That's interesting.
It's a bit more, well, we've had this incident, we might as well be public about it, especially if it's one where it is a ransomware style setup where it's like, we can't get into our systems, so people are going to find this out very quickly, we might as well just say. It's at the same time we're seeing certain industries have had a drop in data breaches being reported, which implies almost the exact opposite, because it's unlikely that there have been less people having data breaches. It's more likely they're just not reporting it, which is its own set of problems. So a mixed bag.
Okay. Let's move on from that one, shall we? Should we go on to the next one quickly, Tim? The next one is this. It's another security-related one, because that's Tim's shtick. This is on Malwarebytes Labs website, malwarebytes.com. Under the engineering hood, why Malwarebytes chose WordPress as its CMS. So it's security blended with a bit of WordPress. Sounds like good news.
So yeah, I was going to say, it's not really a security story other than who is moving who using WordPress behind the scenes. Malwarebytes is a very popular security blog. It's a very popular set of security software. And honestly, the story is basically why they chose WordPress, the setup, but they do put quite a lot of emphasis into the security aspects and about some of the things that they've done and way that they've changed things to make it more secure on WordPress. But actually, I really did like the fact that they went through basically outlining why they thought this was a good choice. It's ironic that in a couple of cases, I went, that's not quite what I would have put there. And so whether or not they're going to be changing their mind in 2 years' time, we'll see.
The Joomla story.
But on the whole, it's a good news piece, and it's a well thought out piece, and it really shows that if you take the time to look at WordPress and not just immediately poo-poo it, you can find good things, and you can actually go, okay, there is that good reasons to still use WordPress. I think we're as an industry, we've got very, and as a WordPress community, we're like, oh, we're on the decline. People aren't coming to us anymore. Oh no, we must look at shiny thing over there. Oh no, we must react immediately. And this is a good example of like, actually, if we do the right things and stay the course, people will come to us, because people do recognize that going for the shiny is not always the right answer. And that's what this article is.
Did you just make a React-based joke?
No.
Oh, it would have been so good.
Sorry.
We need to react immediately, is what you said. That was very good. Yeah. Okay, so there we go. As always, I will put the links in the show notes. So there's two pieces from Tim. And then we're going to move on to a few bits and pieces that Mark has sent in our direction. This one, very much in the the WordPress space. It's over at WP Product Talk. I mentioned Matt Cromwell earlier. Matt does a podcast with like a whole crowd of people, or is it just?
I know Katie's on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I just wondered if it was more than Katie Keith. There's a picture here of Katie, and they're talking about lifetime deals. What did you glean from this, Mark?
So essentially, lifetime deals is something you see in the WordPress plugin space. So I think Katie says in this article that Barn2, she's the owner of Barn2, and they build plugins for, I think it's like WooCommerce mainly, but other things.
Yeah, yeah.
And they offer some of their plugins. I was just looking this morning, not all of them, but some of them, they offer a lifetime pricing package at 4 times the cost of an annual package. So if you want to buy it once and never pay for it again, you'll pay 4 times the cost. And essentially, this article was saying that she was worried. She thought that this wasn't a problem, and this confirms it as they've gone through and done all the data, that essentially they make more money from that than they do from selling the cheaper ones, if that makes sense. Now, as a product owner myself, I would be kind of, I've always been on the side of offering lifetime deals, like a one-off cost that people pay. But essentially, as he's saying, those customers use less support and they need less hand-holding than the customers that buy it on an annual basis, and therefore it actually makes them more money. I think that's the crux of the article, which I thought was really interesting.
It feels
wrong to me, does lifetime licenses, but I guess if financially it makes sense, then why wouldn't you do it, I suppose, is the thing.
I suppose with the lifetime deal thing, like the 4x kind of is a really credible place to put it, isn't it? Because, you know, if your churn rate is, I don't know, let's say 2.5 years or 2 years or something like that, then you're doing really well if you get 4 years out of it. But I think a lot of people, when they think about lifetime deals, they think about that AppSumo model where it's like, you know, bargain basement, $49 forever and a day. That is a different animal, I think, to this,
When a product first starts, don't you? And you get these offers that's like to try and fund it and initially get it started. This is different to that. This is actually the like business model of how they price their products, or certainly some of them.
Yep.
Just got me thinking about our products. Would it work for our products? And got me thinking, why as a consumer would you want to pay 4 times as much for something, apart from the fact you know you're never going to pay for it again?
Yeah,
but 4 years seems a long time to think I'm still going to need this product in my tech stack with how things progress and change. So
I am an absolute sucker for that psychology, though. I am genuinely, all you have to say to me is lifetime deal, and I will inspect that deal much more closely than if I didn't. I will dwell on the page and get into the detail of the product, because I don't know what it is that is this, like, this value over time. And you're right, there's a few things in the WordPress space that I've stuck to for more than 4 years,
but
the vast majority is like a couple of years. You know, they have their moment, they do a thing, then somebody supersedes it, does a better thing, so you go and get that one. But I can tell you, Mark, from the point of view of just looking at all the products that you've got available, if you've got a lifetime deal, I will look harder at it, which is kind of curious and a bit a bit weird. It's not sensible.
I guess there's a counter argument that the sort of person who's going to take that 4-year deal is already your customer champion. So they're already fully engaged and locked into your mm-hmm. product. And basically you're now reducing the ability to maximize that appeal to them. You're not going to be able to, because they're going to be, anybody who's going to buy that for 4 years is planning to be here for 4 years. So, you've just lost that connection with them, whereas you could have been potentially increasing your pricing over those 4-year periods. So it feels like a really, you're basically going, I'm going to want to, unless you're offering that deal to the person because you want to do something else, maybe to make them into influencers down the line or whatever, that might make sense. But otherwise, you're basically just capitalizing on somebody who would have paid you more in the first place.
Mm. Yes. And they become your brand ambassador. So I've been using WordPress since 2008, and Divi used to offer a lifetime license, and I own it. I will never leave Divi just because there's no additional cost. And I tell people about Divi about it. Like, I am that's the brand point. Ambassador yeah. for Divi. Here I am talking to yeah. you guys about Divi, and that's the whole thing. And coming from the old world where plugins had one cost, moving to a SaaS model, that was a huge culture shock when I started using Shopify for a while, because Shopify is you pay the SaaS model and it's never ending. And those costs build up over time. And you think about it, if you're looking at 15 different plugins for your store and you have to pay a SaaS model for each one of those, that's expensive. But whereas if you're just paying one price for the lifetime of it, you become very, very loyal to it because it's supporting you. It's there. It's solid. You get what you need from it, and then you don't have to worry about it. So
it's kind of interesting.
You also paid for it, so you right, will yeah. make it work.
Yes, exactly.
Katie's business model is to have a range of products that do a small amount of things well. So it's not like there's just this giant one thing.
Right.
So I suppose if she can get a few people on with this one thing on a lifetime deal, there's an opportunity later on to, I don't know, send an email or whatever to maybe try and persuade them to get the other products as well. Mm-hmm. Katie, I don't know, Mark, how well you sort of follow Katie's stuff, but Katie really runs the numbers. You know, she's very honest and forthcoming about her business and the data behind her. It's amazing yeah. how honest
yeah,
she
definitely.
Is.
Yeah, definitely. If you're not following her on Twitter, I recommend it.
Because yeah.
She posts very open about the whole yeah. business and what yeah. they do and decisions they make and the things that go into making those decisions.
It's and really the one insight. Thing that almost nobody is willing to divulge, she tells you her numbers.
Yeah.
And so she's run the data, and for her, I think it said six of the bits and pieces, six. Yeah, I analyzed six. No, sorry, 6 years that was. 6 years of Bantu's real support data. I'm just quoting off the page here, to discover how lifetime customers actually need help and whether the higher price truly covers the cost long term. And the bottom of the line is that she thinks that it works. It's a, yeah. it's a winner for them. So, yeah, curious. I think as a product owner, I'm not a product owner. I might be at some point in the near future, hopefully. This kind of stuff is something that kind of keeps me awake at night, because I get what you're meaning, Mark. You don't really want to give away the baby with the bathwater and, you know, have infinite support. There's another thing. I don't know what you get with your lifetime deal with Bantu. Do you get support forever and ever and a day, or is it just the plugin updates or what?
I assume so, or else yeah. why would you do it?
Well, some people do some lifetime deals. You get plugin updates, but you get a year of support. Yeah.
Got you. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to check.
But an interesting. Yeah, definitely go and follow Katie Bantu. But again, links will be in the show notes. Does anybody want to add anything to that before we move on to Mark's next bit? Okay, in which case we'll move on to Mark's next bit. A feature sorely lacking from core WordPress has been the accordion. But it's coming to a... Well, I think we're all using details blocks or yeah. downloading third-party suites of blocks and things like that. However, 6.9, a credible accordion, an actual accordion, is going to land in WordPress. And you're giving us Justin Tadlock's theming article. What do you want to do with this?
As always, excellent from Justin. Really easy to follow.
Yep.
I love reading his articles and then coming out with something really positive at the end. So if you want to know about the coding block, I guess this is kind of the place to go.
Yep.
To read it. It's on the WordPress.org site.
Yeah.
One of the sort of like articles that they publish. I can't remember which section it's in now. Is it in the make section of
it's developer.wordpress.org.
So I think the accordion block is, there's two blocks. There's an accordion wrapper and then an accordion item block, I believe, and they nest to produce accordion. So we use a lot of these on sites, and like yourself, we've been using the details block or building our own. And it's nice to see this coming into core, I think. So yeah.
It's he's done a really nice job. Some of these look really, really nice. You know, he's done a really good job. And obviously it's for those of you that just want to short circuit figuring out the CSS yourself. He's done that hard work, and you know, I don't think it'll be all that difficult to work out, but now you don't even have to think about it because Justin has done it. That's free. Look at that. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
That really fits my aesthetic of what I like to look at on a website. Well done, Justin. Nice. Styling accordions in WordPress 6.9 if you want to Google it. But as I said, it'll be in the show notes. And one more. This is Ryan Welcher this time, another automatician.
So this, I presume we've all used the query loop block at some point in our past.
Yeah.
And it does what it says on the tin. It gives you a query loop for posts or whatever. And this plugin kind of gives you all the stuff that you wish that block actually had.
Yeah.
Like querying via custom fields, querying via everything except a specific taxonomy. There's all sorts in there. We had a client came to us asking for a little piece of functionality. It was like, oh, we were using the query block and it doesn't do what they wanted it to do. So it was like, oh, what do we have to do about this? Do we have to build something? Blah, blah, blah. And I had used this before a long time ago, installed it, and it was just lovely. So I just thought I'd mention it.
If you want
controls on your query to do more things, all the stuff that you really want to do is probably in this plugin. So give it a look.
The one thing that I'm surprised that the core version doesn't do, and I don't think it does it, I could be wrong, you can't do multiple post types at the same time. You can't create a query of, let's say, posts and some other custom post type. You can just do a post type. Yeah. Whereas this image, I can see it on the here. He's first out of the bat. First thing that I can see on that screenshot is exactly that. It's able to combine.
The other really good thing about it was that once I'd installed this plugin, I could simply, I don't know what the technical term is, but convert the existing query loop block into this new one. So I didn't need to rebuild it or anything. I could just, what's that button that says, you know, convert to a different block?
Yeah, that, I know suggestions. What you mean. Yeah, yeah.
This came straight up as a suggestion, just pressed it, and then you got all the other options appeared. So it was really good.
Do you know, does this create a new block or does it just hijack the settings of the
current? I believe it's using the query block and it's just extending it as such rather than a new block.
Yeah, ideal. Yeah, because when you've installed a bunch of those things and you type in query or loop, you get about 9 and then the icons all look broadly the same. They've got two like overlapping circles that look a bit like a number 8. And then, you know, you'd have to, okay, that one's slightly bluer than that one. I think that's the one I like. Yeah. So anyway, needless to say, you probably won't need anything else if you've got this installed. And it's totally free.
Totally free, yeah. And I think recently it's had some updates. It says 3 months ago there. I call that recently.
Yeah.
It's had a few iterations, but recently some...
From the very nice Ryan Welcher. Right. Okay. Next one. All I have to say is shield your eyes. if you've got any kind of like motion thing, don't keep looking. It's just full on. Look at it. Why are we looking at this, Mark?
Well, it was simply something I came across. I'm a big Formula One fan. I was watching it last night. I don't know how I ended up going to this. It's LandoNorris.com. He's a Formula One driver. And I just landed on this and thought, ooh, that is interesting. Part of me thinks, wow, that is really cool. I think that's quite nice. And then you start thinking technically, how would you deliver that sort of thing? But then part of me actually uses it and thinks, I'm not sure that this is actually a good experience. Once you've got past that initial, you know, like excitement of it all moving around, it sometimes is a bit like distracting. It'd be interesting to see what people think. So yeah, it was just one of those things where I'm not quite sure whether I love it or whether I hate it.
So my previously my mouse was away from the screen. This is the default version of it. Yep. It's just that. But then as soon as you start putting your mouse in, look at all this. To me, it's a video. I'm literally watching a video or an advertising hoarding. You know, like advertisements at bus stops now, they've all got like video screens and all that kind of stuff. It looks like something like that. But the joy carries on. Because you keep look, everything that could be done to make this interesting is being done. Look at it, like really strange scrolling that sort of goes left and then right and then comes back. And I have
it's
no
kinda cool,
idea.
It's kind of cool. I don't know. I'm still a bit tired as to what I think of it. But then there's some of the other features on the other pages are quite nice as well.
Okay, let's
more
try
simple.
Else.
Well, slightly more simple.
Let's go. Oh, the transition. Cool. Yeah, that was kind of fun. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine how many meetings there were to get this website launched? There's not enough spin on the helmet. We need more spin on the helmet. Yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing. It just shows you what a modern browser can do. My personal take, Mark, if you're interested, is it's just too much for me. It's way too much.
I find it stunning. Oh, I think it's,
isn't that interesting?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I think my take on these is I love them initially. You land on the website and it's beautiful and its transitions are amazing. But then I think once you've seen that once and you actually want to read the website, I kind of want to take that away and just get to the content.
Yes.
But that's just me.
This reminds me of the old days with like Macromedia and... you know, back in the 1990s, back when everybody was starting to experiment with all the different things that you could do on a browser. And it's just, there's a bit of nostalgia, I guess.
So I'm looking at it on a phone as we speak, and it's having a time. Let's put it that way. The phone is everything is jittering and, you know, not managing to keep up. Can I just say, I have no doubt that he's called Lando Norris. There's no way his parents weren't Star Trek fans. who's called Lando? Apart from...
Do you mean Star Wars?
That's what I meant. Oh, I fluffed the line so badly. Oh, I feel terrible. Yes, I do mean Star Wars. Lando, what was his name? Calrissian or something.
I remember.
There we go. Yeah, it looks like a film to me. It is definitely too much, but... it'd be interesting if we got Peacher Neri in the comments. We don't, I don't think, this week, but she would be she'd be up in arms, I'm sure. Because I have no agency. I don't know if I can switch all this stuff off. Can I switch it off?
I don't need to be able to. I did wonder that.
Yeah, no. Anyway, it's beautiful, very interesting, and very, very, very cool. James says, the good old days of Flash. Yeah, indeed. That's what it's like. All right. Okay. And this one came courtesy of Stacey. I haven't read this one because it was dropped in at the last moment. So tell us what we're looking
at. It's kind of going with the old nostalgia aspect. It's the theme throughout all of this is that, you know, they did this study that showed that affiliates with all the changes with AI and Google and changing their algorithms, that newsletters are being used by affiliates for growth. And I think it's an important thing to relearn because a lot of companies and businesses have moved away from newsletters. And I think it's time to reapproach the own your own media and data aspect. So, what was it? They found that websites or affiliates that used newsletters had a 66% increase in conversions.
Wow.
Their open rate is typically 39%. Click rate is it's about 5%. And I found it kind of interesting that they saw the most engagement on Mondays, Fridays, and weekends, because that is something that has changed quite a bit. So,
they're the days that I would never send email because I thought they were the worst days. Oh.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I thought was kind of interesting, but it goes back to the aspect of, you know, why do we use WordPress? Why did I use WordPress? It's so I could own my data. You know, when I ran an e-commerce company, we installed WordPress so that we could do a newsletter. That was the sole purpose because I had an e-commerce company and my designers posted on WordPress and we RSS fed that over to MailChimp and sent out a newsletter on a daily basis. And so just seeing it kind of come back and becoming relevant again It's all full circle.
I find that really curious because I've been using the internet since fairly early on, not the very beginning, but, you know, when email was more or less the only thing that was a way of communicating. There were web pages and an email and that kind of thing. Email is the one thing that's never been dropped by me. I've never stopped using email. You know, I've tried different social platforms and used those as a broadcast platform or a way of communicating, but email has always been the way of doing it. And oddly, I was having a chat with my son the other day, who's now old enough to sort of enter the workplace. And he was saying, you know, nobody uses email, Dad. And I said, wait till you're about 20. And we'll have this conversation again, because as soon as you enter the workplace, it's going to be email. I don't care what you think. It's not going to be Snapchat. But I've always read newsletters. That's another feature. I've subscribed to them the minute I'm curious about something that somebody's doing, because I know that they can get intravenously into my head in a way that I want them to. And I know that I can unsubscribe from them. So I'm kind of astonished that it even went away. I didn't realize that it was a thing which kind of ebbed and flowed. Okay.
Yeah. Because I mean, you know, the generations are being conditioned by social media.
Yeah.
And what they are not being conditioned on is to understand that they don't own that data.
Right. Right.
Their brand is not theirs. It's TikToks or YouTubes. And, you know, even down to like, I'm on TikTok and seeing people build link trees. Well, link trees are where they can actually put all their links, but it's still not theirs because it's hosted on a different company. But to be able to own your own data is so important because nobody can take that away from you. Whereas YouTube could shut you down in a heartbeat. Whereas newsletters, you know, those are yours. Those are your people. You know who they are. You can build the demographics around them and understand exactly who they are. And nobody's controlling that except for you.
I think my podcast episodes, I've got a plugin which is built inside of WordPress, which kind of in some way kind of hijacks the post type and enables you to send proportions of what you write in the post out to the email client in, you know, like MailChimp or whatever it may be. And so I'm just writing it in one place and it's all happening. That's really nice. But I know, Tim, you've got a newsletter and I think you have a kind of on and off relationship with it. I don't know if it's easy for you to keep going with it.
It's currently in its very off state. But yeah, no, I've been doing Random Mutterings, which is my newsletter, has been going for 15 years on and off. And it was a traditional newsletter. It was started as a, this is what I'm doing at the moment. And it's morphed into things over time. But I really struggle to send that consistently. I struggle to make time for it. And when it became a chore, it wasn't fun. Now, to be clear, that for me, Random Mutterings isn't actually a business part of that. In fact, one of the reasons I think people subscribe is because I pretty much don't sell anything in it ever. Occasionally I'll say I'm going to this place or I'm at this conference, but beyond that, I try very hard not to sell anything on it. It's all about what I find interesting, what I come through. I'm wondering though, on the Monday and Fridays, if those stats will very quickly change, because currently everybody, like including Nathan, is currently not posting on a Monday to Friday. So basically, you just got less competition, which is why.
Everybody will just
jump on the trend, and Tuesdays and Wednesdays are where it's going to be.
Yeah, I do Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I just assumed that Fridays was off because everybody was kind of gearing up for the weekend, and Monday because everybody was dealing with the inbox deluge that happened on Thursday, Friday, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But that's really interesting.
I think it depends on what you're selling. And Tim, you might not be selling anything like tangible, but you're selling yourself. And that's the whole aspect of those newsletters.
I can tell you've not read one of my newsletters. You can buy me after that.
But yeah, so I mean, like on the weekends, I look at newsletters because I'm doing hobbies. So it's a hobby aspect.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a business product that has business decision making, that's during the week. So it really kind of depends on what it is you're trying to sell. Going back to my e-commerce company, you know, we did the same thing. They posted on WordPress. It would take a blurb from that and just get into a newsletter. And so we never had to put a newsletter together. It's whatever was posted on the blog would end up in the newsletter. And we sent that on a daily basis. And it was phenomenal because there was no thought put into it. We just posted on WordPress and that was our newsletter.
Yeah, and off it went. Yeah.
And off it went. Yeah.
It's kind of curious. I'm still using RSS readers. You know, Google Readers long since dead, but I've had many alternatives over the year. I still love that. And email newsletters, I absolutely love it. And there's just something about the A, you've allowed them into your life so that they can just dump stuff into your inbox. But B, you can just ignore it. You know, if you haven't got the time, you just ignore it. And then I go through and, you know, maybe I'll look at it a couple of weeks later or something. Tim, though, just asking you, do you feel like with your random mutterings, does it feel like failure if you don't stick to a cadence? Could you just flip over to random schedule? Couldn't you just do it as a whenever the heck I've got time kind of thing?
The psychology behind it is quite scary. But yeah, no, basically, the reason I haven't posted is because of that feeling of like failure of not reaching the previous cadence. And then going, well, if I start again, I have to be doing this regularly. Otherwise, what's the point? So I also think that there is a level of expectation. I mean, Jim sitting there where people are like, I've signed up to this. I expect you to deliver me something. And when you suddenly very much out of the blue go, hello, with my random newsletter that really is random timings. And then it's like, no context attached to it. It's like, oh, hi, yeah, here's this newsletter. I've been really fortunate that the people who do subscribe really want that because they're putting up with it.
Can I just disagree with you there? I think they've subscribed, so you already know they want your stuff.
Yeah.
I think you don't need to apologize to them, I don't think, because they've already confirmed, like, I like Tim Nash, I want his stuff, and they'll be happy to get it whenever the heck you decide to drop it. That's my take. Anyway.
The name is random. Random doesn't have a cadence to it.
We should point out that nothing is truly
nothing
random.
Oh, we've done this. This is a whole episode. No, we're not going there again. I'm going to prove to you one day that something is random. I don't know what it's going to be. It'll probably be something my son says, which is very random, I can assure you. Okay, so newsletters are a thing. It turns out, and there's loads of solutions in WordPress. If you fancy getting yourself on, you know, WordPress.com, Jetpack, does all that kind of stuff. I'm using a thing called Newsletter Glue. What else is the Mail Power? There's all sorts of different ways you can do it. Or you, what do you use? You use Button Down or something, don't you, Tim?
Yeah, I use Button Down, though I'm moving away from it.
This is one of the things I've noticed about you, is the platform is half the fun. Fiddling with the platform.
I do, because I'm a tinkerer at heart. That's what I like. And that's a part of the problem, is that it's like, the reason I chose Button Down was for all the reasons that I suspect Stacey would hate Button Down. I have no tracking capabilities. I don't know how many people opened the newsletter. I don't know how many people clicked on the newsletter. This to me is exciting because it means it's very privacy focused. It means people can sign up knowing that I can't just sell my newsletter mailing list to a bunch of companies and say, I could, even if someone came to me today and said, I'd like to advertise on your blog, on your newsletter, how many subscribers do you have? And I'm over there going, really? I sort of know the answer to that question. But that's the type of thing I wanted it to be. It's a hobby. It's a hobby thing that was put there. If you take something like jpsecurity101.com, that newsletter goes out every 2 weeks. It's packed full of bits and pieces.
That's your business more,
isn't it? That's the business one.
Right.
And, you know, that one matters. So that has to have, and that does have the cadence that keeps going. But yeah, the random mutterings is like, it's very much my tinkering hobby. And that's how I learn. That's how you should learn and develop stuff.
So Jonathan Overall is saying, you know, the usual thing that we always say in the WordPress space, owning your own data. He's been preaching that for 27 years. Yep, absolutely. Courtney says, I love Feedly. So we're back to RSS, Feedly RSS, and to receive newsletters. Oh, it does that as well, does it?
Yeah, I use Feedly for that.
Whatever nice the minimum paid plan is, it gives me that ability. Yeah. Great. Yeah, Stacey, you were just...
Yeah, no, I use it too, just because I can like categorize the each little thing that I want to read.
Oh, and okay. Then, you can sort of tag things and whatnot.
Yeah. And I usually, whenever I travel, that's when I go to Feedly.
And then Courtney says, again, RSS, Torsten. I don't know. Do I know Torsten? Torsten. Is that a person? I'm guessing. Just built a blog post wishing more of the WP block CSS layouts could pass over RSS. Dave Weiner spoke about it. It's truncated last week at WordCamp Canada. And then maybe this is Matt Medeiros. This show got a lot more posh with Wilkinson here. There you go. That's all we have to say.
Posh?
That's going to be the title of this episode now. This show got a lot more posh with Wilkinson here. That's that's what it's going to be. You are very posh, Mark. I've noticed that.
Posh? Really?
No. Does anybody know what posh stands for? The acronym. Do you all know that story? It may be apocryphal. It's an acronym. And if you were sailing from the UK to America, the best views could be seen out of a certain side of the ship in both directions. And so it's the acronym for port out starboard home. There you go. And I can prove it because it's in Mary Poppins. So there you go.
Right. Are we using... I just to check, you do know that Mary Poppins is a... fictional story. There isn't.
I'm going to mute you if you go any further. There's nothing that you're to be said. There you go. See. Look, it comes out of the mouth of the one and only Keith Devon. I think Mark knows him a bit. Port out, starboard home. Exactly. That's what I thought too. So go and have an argument with him, Tim. Right. Okay. Let's move on. Let's do some WordPressy bits and pieces. Press the button on my thing, which makes all the screens go into a smaller version. So, right, everything's got a bit messed up. Okay, WordPress 6.9 coming around very, very soon. If you have any intuition that you'd like to help with anything, can I just point you in the direction of this one article? It's massive. It's absolutely massive. There's no way we're going to get through it. I mean, if I scroll, you'll get an impression. This article will give you the absolute lowdown on all the bits and pieces that would benefit from being tested on. So all of the new features that are dropping, but it's not just random things. It's also little videos showing you the kind of things that you might be interacting with, the things that they want feedback on. And so it's a very, very thorough piece. So firstly, hat tip to Krupa Nanda for writing such a long piece. It's due to ship December the 2nd, 2025. So not that far away. And you can see from the table of contents here exactly what might need looking at. So it's things like, I don't know, ability to hide blocks. There's a key testing checklist, border radius. There's some developer stuff to look at. Social links are getting an update. There's all the new blocks, the accordion block, the math block, the paragraph and heading, blah, 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 blah. And on it goes. If you fancy helping the project out, this is a great place to make your endeavors known in the next 4 or 5 weeks. Anybody got anything to add to that? I suspect not.
I was going to say, just to say that you can still do bug reports independently from this. This is like a big guide for things that they would like testing and help with.
Yep.
It's okay to just download the beta tester plugin and play with it in your own use cases and just flag things that are issues. You do not have to join the full-on testing team experience to help provide feedback, because feedback, regardless of how it comes, is super important.
Thank you.
Where do you provide feedback, just out of interest?
If you're brave enough to be on track.
There's the core test Slack channel. Is one place that you could join. That's probably the most useful, I would have thought. But
that's where, if you're joining in with the scrubbing and the testing that they're asking for, if you're picking up issues and bugs and things, if you think it's just a general issue, then there is space on the WordPress forums. And if you think it is a bug, then if you're brave, track.
This is one of the problems that I think we suffer from in this community, is there's lots of different places where you can go to do lots and lots of different things, and there's not one like canonical satisfies every kind of thing. So that can be very confusing. There's a multitude of different places, all that have utility, but all that have utility in slightly different ways. I think you were nodding there, Tim. I don't know if you agree.
I was just thinking that it's very organic. We've developed these things.
Yep.
You know, if we were building the if project was being built today, Track wouldn't exist. But Track exists and is the canonical-ish place that things are going to. But then you've got we want to be as flexible and as friendly as possible to people so that you can get your issues reported in the easiest way possible. And so if you open up more channels, then you've got the problem. Well, now we have to manage all those channels independently and we've got to still bring them all back. So you're never going to win, basically. If you have too much communication lines, then things get lost. And if you have one communication tool like Track, people are just going to go, and not be able to make their way through it.
Yeah. So Tammy's saying I think we've just reprised reporting bugs on Track / GitHub and core test. And she says it's more, there are options. Yes, indeed. Okay. Thank you. Anyway, the reason I was bringing this article to bear here though, was just the range of things that you might not realize it would be useful to cast an eyeball over. Obviously, there's a bunch of suggestions here for things that you might want to do. You know, it may be that you've got no complaints and you've got nothing that you've ever seen that might need looking at. So here's some ideas, basically. So we can
find bugs, don't worry.
Indeed. Okay, so quickly moving on. This is a little bit of a, self-promotion. I did a podcast episode this week with a lovely chap from the Pew Research Foundation called Seth Rubenstein. And I don't know anything about the Pew Research Foundation, but it turns out if you live in the US, they're like this, I want to say kind of almost philanthropic. I don't think it's got a political affiliation, let me put it that way. They amassed huge amounts of publicly available data and then digest it and make it available for people to sort of draw conclusions about the state of this and the state of that. Massive amounts of data. And Seth Rubenstein is a WordPresser and also works with them trying to make that data presentable to millions of people who want to consume it in the US. And so he was talking to me about what he was calling block composability, which was not something that I really understood, but it was the idea of kind of combining different things and some of the new features that are going to come in WordPress in the very near future, if they haven't dropped already, and some of the capabilities that are going to be possible. Tim and I talked about it a little bit about it last week. Block bits, which whether or not it will happen, I even put it in brackets, still very much in development. Things like the block bindings API and interactivity API. It's hard for me to sum up. Seth does it better, but it's the idea of a wrangling data and presenting things in charts and all sorts of other ways excites you, then go and check that episode out. Number 190 on the tavern. Okay. Right. Shall we do this one? Does anybody have any interest? I'm just looking at the time. We've only got half an hour left. Do you think we want to do this one? Okay. Let's do it quickly. So Search Engine Journal. I'm not sure what anybody makes of that, whether or not that's a good thing or not. I'm not so sure about whether I trust everything that they say. But they produced an article this week called WordPress versus Everyone, the top CMS for Core Web Vitals. So, you know, they're into Google search results, search rankings, and the metrics that make your site successful in Google. And so they say why Core Web Vitals matter, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And then they go on to rank the CMS. You know where this is going. They go to rank the CMSs in order of kind of like a out-of-the-box version of the website and how well it does in Core Web Vitals. You know, make of that what you will. The number one CMS in terms of Core Web Vitals, according to Search Engine Journal, is Duda. Is that even how you say it? I'm a bit mindful of saying that incorrectly. Duda. In second place came Wix. Well done, they get the silver medal. Fighting for bronze was Squarespace. Everybody else is an also-ran. Drupal came in fourth. Joomla came in fifth. And our beloved WordPress came in last out of six. It came in as six out of six. So
my empty text file came in first, I'd like to point out. We're 100%. So
anyway, the point being, you know, I think a vanilla version of WordPress out the box has a fighting chance of doing really well. As an example, I put a website out this week just for testing a few bits and pieces, and I ran it through Core Web Vitals. It was vanilla. It had a default 2025 theme in it. I put a bunch of blog posts on. I did some query loops, yada, 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 really ordinary stuff. It was A across the board, A for every, there was no images, I'll say that. It was A across the board, you know, super duper everything. It was done on Pressable, whatever that counts for. Which is a hosting company, if you didn't know. And so, you know, it all worked out of the box. However, you know, you get a big organization like Search Engine Journal writing something like this, and they say, there is also a perception that WordPress is faster than Wix, Doodle, and Squarespace. The facts, of course, show that the opposite is true. WordPress is the slowest of content management systems in this comparison. And now, of course, we'll have the deep joy of AI consuming this lovely sentence and regurgitating it ad infinitum.
You don't think that AI wrote that lovely sentence?
Oh, now.
This is just an article written for you, Nathan, to clickbait you into it. Because you said it yourself. You've already been through this process. You installed WordPress with 2024 on. You did some fiddling around. It came out brilliantly.
It did.
Why would then magically theirs not come out brilliantly unless there was some fiddling? They probably didn't even run the test.
Yeah.
They have that little faith.
We can't even trust them on that level anymore. Okay.
I just think when we get to this sort of thing, it's like, this is just AI gloop that's been put out to make you go and promote the Search Engine Journal because they're becoming vastly irrelevant because the AI is stealing all their search rankings.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'm probably
being a bit mean to them, but...
No. Well, I know he's real. I know this chap. Well, at least he was real, baby.
Probably got sacked years ago. He's been replaced by a bot. But genuinely, it's, you know, when somebody says, the reality is the complete opposite of what everybody else has been saying. Usually you have to question at least, how did you do this? If you start, this article lacks any sort of methodology for this testing or even what they tested. What, you know, was it that they set from the moment they installed the site, they then went and ran Core Web Vitals? Well, on a default Drupal site, there's no data on the front end. It's a white page.
That's true. That is
so
true.
Apparently, that still came fourth.
Well, they got a newsletter of over 70,000 people. So everything's good. Okay, let's move on from that one. Anyway, my concern, really, the reason that I raise this is it's just the sort of noise that you get in the ecosystem. You know, when you're dealing with those clients who just sort of have consumed knowledge from somewhere, that WordPress is basically trash, you know, that it's slow, that it's not very secure, that its performance is terrible. Here's an article which they can bring to bear to sort of wave in your face and say, no, not WordPress.
Do you think the 10,000K reads is hard-coded?
It's exactly got a zero on it, hasn't it? If I keep refreshing, do you think it'll go off?
Don't know. Anyway, moving on before I...
Let's move on. Okay, let's move on. Right, let's keep it in the AI sort of space in that case. We're going to run through about four different things in AI, some of them that are very much to do with WordPress, some of them that are not specifically to do with WordPress, but there's kind of an AI thread running through the next four bits. So here's the first one, not particularly WordPressy, but here we go. The BBC, and again, you know, you can trust them or not. They carried out a study, I believe, in association with somebody else. I think there was some other organization involved in that. Asking basically, well, I'll read you the title of the post. Largest study of its kind shows AI assistants misrepresent news content 45% of the time, regardless of language or territory. Now, there is a methodology somewhere. I can't remember. I don't think it's on this page, but you can sort of read the way that they did this test. And the key findings are as follows. It won't come as a surprise, but maybe in the next two or three things, it's kind of interesting to have this in the back of your mind. 45% of all answers had at least one significant issue. 31% of responses showed serious sourcing problems. So this is about the news, right? You're asking about stuff that's happened recently in the news. 20% contain major accuracy issues. Gemini performed the worst, with 76% of responses were suspect. 76%. Comparison between the BBC's result earlier this year and this study show some improvements, but still high level of errors. Okay. The reason I'm painting that picture is, you know, AI is a mixed bag. You know, it definitely will help us in some regards, but there's always this creeping element of, is it going to be doing the right thing for us? Does anybody want to comment on that before I move?
I was going to say, now imagine if you wrote an article about, you got AI to write an article about comparing some CMS platforms, and you just gave it that as a concept. In relation to the idea that it just spuriously generates content.
Do you think they use Gemini for that search?
Maybe we should just ask that. I'm just saying.
Anyway, the point being, I think you'd be very wise not to 100% trust. If you ask an AI a question about something in the news, then you've got to have a little bit of something in the back of your head saying, can I really trust this, and et cetera, et cetera. So let's then map that forwards to the new fun trend in web design, which is using AI to do things like create websites and create content for websites and so on and so forth. And that brings us, actually, interestingly, so we had what I think was Matt Medeiros in the comments earlier, certainly a WP Minute, it looks like it was. This is a piece that Matt, so it's a video, it's slightly frustratingly, I think, for Matt. Matt created a video and I think had done a good job on it, and then discovered that Descript, which is the software that both he and I use to edit content, it just collapsed on him, so he had to reshoot it, which is a bit annoying. But the video is really short, and in it, he is using for the first time something which I have not used. I doubt I ever will. It's ChatGPT's Atlas browser. Now, if, like me, you're a bit of a Luddite and you don't want to go near any of this stuff, this is eye-poppingly interesting in that you chat to the browser. The browser has the chat built in, and then it does stuff on your website involving the cursor. So, for example, he might ask it to write a post about, I can't remember what he asked it to write about, but he asked it to do that thing, and you can see the cursor moving across the screen, and it lands on the page. You know, the buttons that you need to press, it does that, and then it goes to the next thing, and it does that. It's pretty interesting. Is it perfect? No. But is it the future? I hope not.
It's so slow. So yeah. Slow.
So slow.
Like, what's the point? Almost. Like, I think the first thing was, like, deleting the two cover blocks.
That was it. Yeah.
And, like, you know, for me and you, it's just delete, delete. And it took, I don't know if it was speeded up or not, but it took a long time.
Yeah, we had these cover blocks here that he did. Okay, so that was my first thought as well, Mark, was, like, imagine how slow that is. And then I thought to myself, is it that this is the slowest it'll ever be? And is it just slow because it's not yet really sure what it's doing? So there's some sort of confirmation steps going on in the background that are hidden from us as the users, but it's maybe just sort of checking, am I on the delete button? Are we sure I'm on the delete button? Blah, 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 blah. I don't know. But the speed was really obviously painful. But I did wonder, you know, if in 6 months it's twice as fast, and then 6 months after that it's twice as fast as that, at some point you can imagine it would be quicker than you and I. And so
the goal is less about watching it do the thing, though. So the real sort of like thing that they're aiming for is you to go, design me a pretty page on this, hit go, and then go to the next tab. Right, book me my spa treatment, click go, next tab. Go do this, next tab. So you've got multiple tabs all doing things independently of you. It's not designed with the concept of you sitting and babysitting it. Only problem with that is it's we've go back to previous article, we probably want to sit and babysit the AI a little bit
at
the moment, because it's not very good at doing the things.
So you've got the context. So that was why I put that first article up, you know, just to sort of sow the seed of mistrust slightly. And then you get something like this, which I very much felt like you, Tim. The idea would be that you ask it to do something, then basically go and make a coffee, that analogy. Come back, has it done it? Yeah, okay, then I'll ask it another thing and then go off and get another coffee. And before you know it, you've drank 19 coffees and you're,
Once but also, you start thinking of it in parallel, though, you
yeah, exactly.
Sort of this concept of, when we're talking about AI being... about enabling and providing this idea that, okay, well, as one person, I can now do five things at once because I've actually got four AI things doing. And all I have to do is suddenly master context switching, which obviously humans, we are incredibly capable of and don't ever have problems context switching at any point.
No, you get a different browser that does the context switching for you. You know, you have a whole different AI to manage that for you. And you just go and sit down and drink coffee. It's fine.
It is, however, pretty amazing to see it in action. And so I've had a quick play with Atlas and was like, yeah. And the first thing he said was, do you want to log into your Gmail? Like, no, I don't want you anywhere near my email. That seems crazy. But I'm willing to, you know, set up a staging site and let you play with it in the WordPress. But would I put this on a live site? No. Yet weirdly... go on, Stacey.
The thing is, I don't think this was made for you guys. You guys know how to code. I think this is made for my dad, who's never built a WordPress site before in his life. And for him, it putting together a website for him... and it doesn't matter how fast or slow, would be mind-blowing for him because he can't design a website. And so I think that's kind of the whole premise behind it, is giving people who don't know how to use WordPress or build a site the ability to do just that.
I was like, basically, if you could speed this video up and you could ignore the fact that the mouse moved slowly and it did everything slowly, the bit with AI that constantly amazes me is how... it can do any of it at all. And in this case, it didn't just do it. I mean, watching the video, it mostly did everything that was asked with a very, very small text prompt that you know, and not being unselfish to Matt, I don't think the intention was to write a really detailed, long prompt. It was, you know, 15 words in a human readable sentence, click return and see what happens. And it did exactly what he was asking it to. I think even to sort of like not capitalizing the page title that he asked it to create, because he didn't bother to capitalize it in the question itself. I am amazed by it and terrified in equal measure. And Tim, you're right. You know, I'm not going to be downloading this because I don't really have great intuitions about what connecting a browser to everything that I have, like my Gmail account and my Google Docs, and you know, list all the other services that I've got. I don't have good intentions. I don't have good intuitions about what will come of that, even though it might be a real like productivity win in the short term. I'm just not.
I think Atlas is a because bearing in mind, this is a whole browser.
Yep.
This is the idea is to replace Chrome, to replace Firefox. And I'm not sure it is actually aimed at Stacey's dad, because it's a whole new way of thinking about what they're doing. Because you end up with ChatGPT in front of you for most of the time. So when you open up Atlas for the first time, it's the ChatGPT interface. And for a lot of it, you just constantly engaging as if you're in ChatGPT, only... it has a browser, only sometimes when you open a tab, it might have Google in there, and then you might tell Google to do this thing. So it's very much still transitioning. Atlas in 5 years' time will be a humongously empowering thing, I suspect, for somebody with minimal learning curve. Atlas right now is a very cool tech demo. The mouse very slow.
Did you see
the screen?
Did you see an article? Do you follow a guy called Anil Dash? I don't know if you've come across him. He wrote an article this week, which I didn't put into the show notes, actually. But basically, he was saying that this is a pitch for OpenAI through the browser to kind of stop serving you the internet as we know it. You know, it's not going to be like anything that you've had before. You know, it's going to give you something bespoke. You and in the same way that you know, you could accuse sort of social networks of kind of muddying the political waters and what have you. It'll be similar, like nobody will know what anybody else's version of the internet will look like. I know Google have been doing this for a while, but your search results won't come up necessarily in a list. You might just get like the clipped version. It'll try to paraphrase what it thinks you want instead of giving a list of items that you can then click on. Who knows what it's going to do with, you know, if it's trying to give you an answer to something, it might just cherry pick various different bits from different pages. Anyway, it was a really interesting piece, and it didn't sit well with me. It made me kind of feel like, okay, if OpenAI's intention is to modify the internet so that what the viewer looks at through this interface of theirs is different from what I have designed on my WordPress website, I don't buy into that. I hope they don't go down that route, but you know, well, time will tell.
Just going back to the original article, the BBC finding, though, isn't that sort of saying that AI is biased towards certain views? It's not representing the truth. Couldn't you argue that the media is already like that anyway?
Is the argument about bias or just what they call hallucinations? You know, it's just like it in the absence of knowledge, it just puts a fact sentence in front of you as if it were fact.
Yes, but it hallucinates significantly more, particularly in political things. There is a bias within it. Specific to certain AIs, the bias, obviously there is quite a lot that shifts to the right in political spectrum, and therefore it will hallucinate more towards the right because it's more biased that way by default. So you could end up in a position, but it's getting that bias. It didn't generate that bias because it went, I am going to be a right-wing AI. It's getting that bias because the context and the things it's getting are there in the first place, which is coming from the media. So they're all tied together into this scenario where I was sat next to a very, very clever AI specialist at a WordCamp recently. Garbage in, garbage out.
Is that what they said?
Yeah, okay. Garbage in, garbage out. Okay. Depending what you feed into it, really will reflect on what you get out. And so with news in particular, I can see how it hallucinates. Because let's face it, your average Daily Mail news article is a hallucination. They have to be on drugs based on how they perceive the parts of the world and their views on humanity.
Each outlet has a different hallucination already. So is AI any different to that?
What, one thing that I think is kind of really different about this, though, in that we're so used to, we stick stuff on a screen, like you go to, let's say, Google, any search engine you like, and you get they feed ads in and all that, other things trying to divert you, and increasingly Google are trying to give you the answer. But it's a list of links, and then you click on the link and you go to the thing, and you discover for yourself whether that's the answer. And if not, you go back and you begin again. The intention of this browser really does feel like an attempt to get rid of that whole thing. So you don't look at the WordPress website that you have mm-hmm. built. You look at what OpenAI can extract from it, and they decide what the hell is going to go in the viewport because the AI's decided that, okay, in answer to that question, we're going to take a bit from here, a bit from here, a bit from here, and we'll simulate a paragraph from it. And I don't even know. And that being built on a browser level really breaks a kind of fundamental promise, I think, that we've had since Tim Berners-Lee kind of invented hyperlinks. You know, you click on a link and you get to a thing. And the thing may be to your liking or not. You go and find another thing. This is not like that. This is like entering a library. And instead of it being full of books, it's full of, well, I don't even know what. It's just full of something that's not books. Now, there's the analogy.
And Google's doing the exact same thing with their little AI at the top. And the thing is, we're going to get to a point where these AIs are basically putting companies that write content out of business. We've seen it as far as like our affiliates when they changed the algorithm last year and promoted other things above other things. Some of our affiliates are down 62% based off of Google's algorithm.
Oh.
And because of that, you know, it's a catch-22. The AI is wonderful for giving you that little synopsis, but you don't have to click on a website.
No, you don't.
So
yeah, you really don't.
Put, those publishers out of business, where are they going to get their content from?
Well, that's the bit. It's like poisoning the waterhole. It's a really short-sighted way of doing things. And obviously, in the short term, the investors are happy. You know, the stock market, stock price goes up because, but it doesn't seem like we haven't really got the long view in mind. Can I just say, apropos of nothing, this is really nice, right? If you're fed up with Google, I'm not promoting it. There's no affiliate link here. It's called Kaggy. It was started by a guy called Vladimir, whose surname I've forgotten, but he was the guy behind ManageWP. He sold it to GoDaddy, and then he turned his attention to search. I've been using it for about, I don't know, a year or something like that. The sting in the tail is you have to pay. So you pay £100 or they're roughly like that, a year or something like that. But there's no ads. There's obviously some kind of algorithm to give you the search, but you know they're not trying to make it so that it's, you know, the sponsors get their stuff in. And the other thing is you can tailor it. So you can tell it, I like this more, and then it will favor things that you tell it that you like, which I think is kind of interesting. It's called Kaggy. And I'm really enjoying it. I think it's definitely slower than Google. You know, you click return and you wait for like half of a second, but honestly, it's not the end of the world. But I really like it. So fully endorsing it if anybody cares
about it. It's also got a cute dog on it, which...
Yeah, it has a cute dog.
So much branding these days. We've lost the internet's little mascots, and they've all been thrown away with horrible corporate branding.
Yeah, we need more little dogs and cats and wapoos.
Thinking of you, MailChimp, getting rid of Freddy. I've never forgiven them.
Do they have a lifetime license?
No, they don't have a lifetime license, no. No, darn. You can actually bind all the other AIs into it as well, but you bring your... Now, I'm not really familiar with AI, so I'm probably going to butcher what I'm about to say. You bring your context with you, if you know what I mean. So you tell it how you want it to behave. So rather than it just being, you know, you type in a question and it gives you the answer back, you can tell it, I would prefer it, please, if you behaved in this way or what have you. You can sort of set all that up in the background. My intuitions about Kaggy are what I thought Google was going to be like 18 years ago, or in fact what it was, and then it kind of went somewhere else. So pray that Kaggy remains that way. Anyway, there we go. Right. Another thing then, so that was all about this OpenAI browser. Let me go to this one first. We're running out of time really quick. WS Form, Mark Westgaard, good friend of the show, is on lots and lots. He has launched a similar idea than the one that we just saw, binding his form creating tool, WS Form, with Elementor's agentic thing. I don't know what to call that. Is it an app? Is it a plugin?
Agent.
There you go. Thank you so much. So now if you've got Angie, if you use Elementor's Angie agent, you can now bind it to WS Form and you can tell it to create a form. And again, it's very similar in the same way that Matt Medeiros did it with building a web page. There's a video. There it is. It's about 7.5 minutes, something like that, in which Mark chats with the agent and gets it to build a form. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I guess the guardrails are much more in place when you're building a form because, you know, input in, input out, it's much more constrained, isn't it? You know, if it doesn't give you the feel that you wanted, you can see straight away, I didn't ask for that. So hopefully it'll be a little bit more, you know, guardrails.
I watched a very untechnical person use Angie and I was very, not against the concept of it, but obviously I was surprised at how intuitive they did find it. So this, whereas Atlas perhaps not yet suitable for, I'm going to use Stacey's dad, but as the example, perhaps is not yet ready for Stacey's dad. Angie, right. Actually, they could, you know, if they could describe, as long as they can describe what they want, it sometimes would do it.
Interesting.
Which is as close as we could possibly get to good in AI. You know, if we can get to that state of, but again, even with Angie, you have to structure what you say. You're effectively still prompt engineering. We still haven't mastered natural language systems with these things. We still haven't got a natural way of describing stuff. It cannot have a conversation and it be a fluid conversation. We have to think about how would the AI interpret what we're saying and give it structure and boundary and context. And you have to, even if you don't realize you're doing it, you're adjusting what you would naturally say to get the results you want out of it. But it did do stuff. It would, you know, put elements on the page and do things. And I was actually surprised at how impressed I was.
Well, so it was the same with Matt Medeiros' video. Obviously, the AI agent, his was the browser, this agentic browser that OpenAI have got. It obviously knew a fair bit about which blocks to find and how to find them in the UI. Same sort of thing, Ninji, in this particular case, he asked it to build a form with these kind of things in it, and it did it. It managed to, you know, it knew, it had the capabilities figured out of where the UI was and which buttons to click to get those tasks done. Pretty impressive. You know, I mean, it's like baby steps, isn't it? But to me, all of this is absolutely fascinating and terrifying in equal measure. I'm desperately concerned that we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater because it's entertaining. We'll soon see. Right, okay. How much more time have we got? Not a lot. We've just got a couple of minutes. What should we try and squeeze out of it? I'll just throw this one in just to make you feel so much better. The Guardian, the Bank of England, warns of risk of growing AI bubble that could burst at any moment. So, you know, go and buy some gold. That's the takeaway of that article, basically. I think that's it. A couple of other bits which we could mention, but I don't think we're going to.
We have to talk about the bed. We talked about it at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, we have to talk about the bed. You're absolutely right, Stacey. How could I? I'm just going to mention this one quickly first. I didn't know this was a thing. This came from Steve Burge on Twitter. He was mentioning it. He's got Publish Press, and he's very keen to see collaborative editing, you know, like Google Docs inside of WordPress, come to fruition. Not sure that we're going to get there particularly soon, but he caught sight of this project on GitHub. It's an automatic project called VIP. So obviously VIP, WordPress is, Automatic's VIP lane, if you like, real-time collaboration. And it is, you know, here it is. It is a plugin. I don't know what the dependencies are or how it works or any of that. But the word on the street that I've been hearing is that it's pretty credible that it does a fairly good job of giving you that sort of Google Docs kind of simulation of being able to edit multiple things at one time. Sorry, multiple users editing at the same time. Tim, anything on that quickly? I knew you had something previously.
Just that it uses WebSockets behind the scenes. That's quite cool.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so then we get to this one. Very quickly, we'll do animal pictures, you know, because why not? The Guardian have got the 25 best animal pictures from this year, and they're just so cool. So there, look at that. If all of life was like that, we could all relax. It's a picture of a squirrel jumping through the air.
What we now have to tell Nathan is which one of those was AI generated and can you find
none of them. These are all real. They're not fake. They've got the raw data out of the camera. I'm telling you, they're all real. It better be real. Damn it. Okay. And the very last one that we're going to do is what we mentioned. I have no words for this. AWS, there was a crash last week, I don't know, 10 days ago, whenever it was now.
It was last week.
Okay. Yeah.
Because we were filming and we were going to not be able to do this week in WordPress.
Oh, that's right. It was literally last week.
You relied on AWS.
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead and what were you about to say?
Yeah. Okay. So last week, exactly a week ago, AWS crashed and lots of things went down. So banking in the UK, some banks, the government websites, and a whole variety of things just failed to work in the desired way. And
it including was kind of, WP builds this week in WordPress.
Including WP. No, we managed to pull it off. We were only because AWS came back. But loads and loads and loads of unexpected little things that stopped working. And the most extraordinarily weird one that I could find was a bed. How does a bed stop working? Well, somebody has invented a bed which you plug into the internet. I mean, what? Who needs this? And it costs $2,000. And actually, Tim's got a very good reason for why, but I wanted to make fun of it for ages. $2,000, and it allows you to, you know, with an app, you can preheat bed. That's quite nice, I suppose. But then again, just walk in and turn a dial. You know, it's not that hard. And then it'll also fold away. And so apparently a lot of these beds, they couldn't be unfolded. There was no unfold mechanism apart from the app. So this incredibly expensive bed, unless you were prepared to climb into the fold, it was completely unusable. But not only that, the thermostat set itself to high. So they were like red hot toasty, you know, like burning things. And so it begs the question, who needs an integrated?
Maybe it serves you right for buying one in the first place.
Yeah. Too much money. More money than sense. But Tim, you made a good point. Your point was...
Yeah, so... Okay, so the internet-enabled part of it, I'm fully on board with everybody else on the panel. It's like, why were you this? But there is something that's part of me that's like, a preheating bed sounds nice. And I'm like, that's what electric blankets are for. And they never go wrong. But the as for why it got stuck upright and why that one, and having a motorized motor, because we were like, joking before the show and saying, oh, why do you even need one? It's like, well, let's say that you are in a wheelchair and you need to move around your apartment. Your bed is a big bulky thing that gets in the way. You want to be able to move that so you can move your wheelchair freely around. You're not exactly going to be able to get out, lift it, put it up, and use force. So the motorized aspects of it make sense. That there, A, that you might want a bed that will fold up makes sense. All of a sudden, you can start to see why, now make that into an app. That would be really useful. Then I don't need to go near the bed. Now I don't need to lean down to find the buttons, because... Now, it could be a remote. It should be a remote. I can totally see how we got to a smart bed in a practical way. So I'm afraid I've been a big downer on this. Well, taking the mickey out of it.
No. I think it's good. I was having great fun at the bed's expense. However, what I think they've missed a trick. There's not quite enough AI in this bed, in all honesty. I think they really need to drive the AI forward. I don't know what that means, but
imagine if you lying in that bed and it's slowly warming your butt up to tell you it's time to get out of bed.
I'm sold. I'm sold straight away. That's all I needed to hear. $4,000 I'll pay for that bed. Gosh. And what a strange world we live in. Okay, that is truly it. We have run out of time. I'm sorry we kept too long. That article made my eyes water because I thought that was so funny. Stupid bed. Not a stupid bed. If you're the owner of that company,
that was great. Stupid bed for what you wanted.
Okay, so hopefully, if you're in the UK, we'll see you at WPLDN on Thursday. Please come down. Tim's going to be there chatting to us. It'll be really nice. And Thursday, 6 o'clock in London Bridge. That'd be really nice if you feel that you can make it. If not, what the heck. There we go. Right, that's all we've got time for. Both Mark and Stacey, you probably don't know this. We have this slightly humiliating thing that we do at the end of the show. It's not that bad, but we always put our hands up. Everybody puts their hands up like that. And then I just capture that. Look, like that. There we go. That's it. We've done it. We've done the humiliating thing. And I will make that the album art. I think we're going to call this episode, after what Tim just said, I don't know if you noticed it, Tim, you just called it a motorized motor, which I'm desperate to see what one of those is. I'd love that. And it's in that bed, apparently.
It's a motor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right, so that's it. We'll see you next week. Hopefully you'll have a good week and take it easy. Bye.
Bye.
Cheers. Thanks so much. Bye.